The Parsha Vayechi begins with Vayechi Yaakov, and the opening pasuk, Perek Mem Zayin, pasuk Kaf Ches, Vayechi Yaakov Be'eretz Mitzrayim Sheva Esrei Shana, informs us Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim for 17 years. And as is often the case, it doesn't take the Mefarshim long before there is what on which to comment. On the face of it, the words Vayechi Yaakov Be'eretz Mitzrayim Sheva Esrei Shana are telling us time and location. Yaakov was in Mitzrayim and lived there for 17 years. And yet Meshech Chochma has a very interesting insight into these words. According to Meshech Chochma, Vayechi Yaakov Be'eretz Mitzrayim are not just a statement about where Yaakov lived during those years, but how Yaakov lived during those years. For the truth is, says Meshech Chochma, different people live in different ways, and different people's life is felt or expressed in different spheres. There are those people whose life is encompassed by their own existence. They live for themselves, and their lives impact on themselves. And interestingly, in brackets, Meshech Chochma adds, V'gam zeh tov, that's already something, if a person is impacted by his own life. But there are those whose life impacts beyond themselves. It may impact their family, it may impact their neighborhood, it may impact their city, it may impact their country. And such a person was Yaakov, and this is really the full import of these opening words, Vayechi Yaakov Be'eretz Mitzrayim. When the pasuk says Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim, says Meshech Chochma, it means that Yaakov's life was felt in Mitzrayim. And that's very interesting, because Yaakov is not formally involved with life in Mitzrayim at all. He's cloistered away there in Goshen, he's involved in his own pursuits, but nonetheless, his stature was such that his life was felt throughout Mitzrayim, as we know, because as long as Yaakov was in Mitzrayim, there was no famine. Right? The famine stopped after 2 years, and in fact resumed, according to the Sifrei in Parshas Ekev, resumed after Yaakov passed away. And therefore, as long as Yaakov is there, not that many people speak to him, not that many people see him, but everyone appreciates him, and everyone in Egypt has been impacted by him. Vayechi Yaakov Be'eretz Mitzrayim, for those 17 years. And indeed, even the people in Canaan recognize this. As Yaakov is brought up to be buried in Canaan, the people see, and they see how everyone is mourning. The Egyptians are mourning. They mourned Yaakov probably more than they mourned their own pharaohs, who never really did that much for them. Evel kaved hu leMitzrayim. It is a heavy mourning for Mitzrayim. Indeed, the entire country is in mourning because they've been plunged back into crisis. Interesting in this regard, Meshech Chochma explains this is the significance of a parallel statement that was made famously by Reb Yudah HaNossi, which is recorded in the Yerushalmi in Maseches Ksubas in the 12th Perek, where Reb Yudah HaNossi says, paraphrasing clearly the opening of Vayechi, V'chaya Yehuda b'tzipori Shvas Reshana. Yehuda lived in Sipori for 17 years. Who is Yehuda? He is Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda HaNossi. And what does he mean by giving his own rendition of this pasuk that Yehuda lived in Sipori for 17 years? What he means to say, says Meshech Chochma, this is a statement of self-effacement on the part of Rabbi Yehuda HaNossi. Whereas Yaakov lived Be'eretz Mitzrayim and his life impacted throughout the country, Rabbi Yehuda HaNossi, in his humility, stated, Halavai, that my personality impacts on my neighborhood of Tzipori, where I lived. Of course, much more than that was true, but better for the person to speak of less and the truth to be more than the other way around. So these are Meshech Chochma's very interesting comments on the beginning of Parshas Vayechi. Now, what I would like to spend sometime on this evening is, I believe, a well-known passage in the Gemara, and it relates to the opening of this Perek of the Brachos, which is Perek Memtes. So if we have a look at the Pasuk, we'll see straight away what is the basis upon which the Gemara comments. Perek Memtes, Pasuk Aleph. Vayikra Yaakov el Bonov. Yaakov calls his sons, Vayomer, and says, Hey Osvu, gather round, Ve'agidu lachem, gather round, I will tell you that which will happen to you at the end of days. Now, that's quite an introduction. It's also true that seemingly Yaakov does not do that. He does dispense very valuable brachas to each of the Shvatim. But brachas is one thing, and what will happen at the end of days is quite something else. How is it that Yaakov's introduction does not seem to be realized? And indeed, Yaakov himself begins the perek again, so to speak, in the next pasuk. Hikov tzu v'shimu b'nei Yaakov. Gather round and hear b'nei Yaakov. Why is he telling them to gather around? He's already told them in pasuk aleph to get together because he's going to tell them something. Apparently, what it was that he wanted to tell them in pasuk aleph was rendered unable to do so, and therefore he defaults, so to speak, to something else, which of course is also very important, the brachos, but it is something else. So Perek Memtes begins twice. Once in the way that Yaakov would have wanted it to be, and the second time in the way that it actually ends up being. And what is the background to all of this? The Gemara discusses this in Maseches Psachim, in Daf Nunvav Amud Aleph, as told to us by Reish Lakish. The Omar Shimon Ben Lakish, Vayikra Yaakov el Bonov. Yaakov calls his sons, Vayomer, Hey Osvu, Vaagida Lachem, etc. Says Reish Lakish, Bikesh Yaakov Legalos Levonov Ketz Hayomim. What Yaakov wanted to reveal to his sons was Ketz Hayomim, either when the Geula will be, the final Geula, or how the Geula will come about, or what it will be like when the Geula is there. And he wasn't able to. V'nistalka mimenu shchina. And the divine presence was removed from him, and he found himself unable to access that information in a way that he could transmit to his sons. And Yaakov, at that point, became afraid, became fearful. What's wrong? Why is this information being denied him? Amar, shemachas v'sholom, yesh b'mitosi psul, could it be that amongst my children there's someone who is not on the level that he should be, not shouldn't really be part of the program. It's happened before, in the first two generations. Ke Avram, Sheyotza Mimenu Yishmael, they're well aware of their history. His grandfather Avram had more than one child, but not all of them stayed within the program. Yishmael came out. And closer to home, the Avi Yitzchak and my father Yitzchak, Sheyotza Mimenu Esav, and therefore Yaakov is saying, is there another Yishmael here? Is there another Esav here who doesn't deserve to be here? That's the only way he can understand or explain why the knowledge of Ketz Hayomim, that information, is being denied. Amru lo bonav. But his sons say to him, they reassure him, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. This is one of the early iterations of the Shema. And interestingly, on this occasion, when they said Shema Yisrael, they don't mean what we mean when we say Shema Yisrael. When we say Shema Yisrael, when we say here, O Israel, who are we referring to? To the Jewish people, or anyone who's listening. We should be listening. But when they said Shema Yisrael, they're talking to Yisrael, to the original Yisrael, who is Yaakov. And what they're saying is, Amru, Kishem She'ein Belibcha Ela Echad, in the same way that there is only one God in your heart, Kach Em Bilibeinu Ela Echad. So too, there's only one God in our heart. As if to say, we're all on level. They don't actually address the question as to, if so, why then was the Shekhinah removed from Yaakov? That remains unknown, or at least unaddressed. But in the meanwhile, Yaakov responds, and this is the roots of the response. Ba'osa shah pasach Yaakov avinu va'amar barashim kavod machuso la'olam voy. This is the origins of barashim kavod machuso. That's what he said in response to their saying Shema Yisrael. Now, interestingly, although it's an amazing story, it left the rabbis in something of a quandary. Because now that we know how to respond, so to speak, to Shema Yisrael, what does this mean for normative Jewish practice? Amrei Rabbanan. Many centuries later, the Rabbanan are looking back. They're looking to give us the way to do the mitzvahs. Heichinavit. What should we do? Should we say Baruch Shem after saying Shema Yisrael? In our Shema, Nimruhu, should we say it? But Lo Amara Moshe Rabbeinu. But Moshe didn't say it. What does that mean that Moshe didn't say it? That means that as Moshe transmits the psukim of Shema Yisrael in the Torah, because Shema, of course, is from Devarim, Parshas Vayeshanan, if you look there, you will not see Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso. And therefore, as Moshe is transmitting the mitzvah and the text, so to speak, of Shema Yisrael, so we don't say Baruch Shem. So it's hard to say it, because Moshe didn't say it. Okay, so don't say it. Lo Nimru. But if we don't say it, but Amar Yaakov, but Yaakov said it. So we're stuck between Moshe and Yaakov. Moshe didn't say it, Yaakov said it. We want to do the right thing by everyone. And therefore, Hiskinu Shir Omen Oso Bachashai. Therefore, they instituted that it should be said quietly. And now everyone's happy. You don't say it out loud, because Moshe didn't say it, but you don't completely omit it, because Yaakov did say it. That's the way forward. The Gemara has one more thing to add. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. What else can one say here? Mashal. Rabbi Yitzchak provides us with a mashal, a parable, to help understand the situation on a more profound level. Mashal Abbas Melech. Sheherichu tzikei kedera. The matter could be compared to a daughter of royalty, a princess, who caught the whiff and the aroma of tzikei kedera. Tzikei kedera is a kind of a spicy food. It has a very pungent aroma, and whoever smells it feels that they would like some. On the other hand, it's hardly hot cuisine. This is really the stuff at the bottom of the pot that everyone likes, but no one likes to ask for. And therefore, she's stuck. Im tomar, if she will ask, can someone bring me some of that tzikei kedera? Yesh lo gnai. That's degrading for her. She's a princess. She shouldn't be asking for things like that. She should be asking for more bland foods. Lo tomar, but if she doesn't say it, yesh la tzar, she has cravings. So what's the way forward? Hischilu avadeha lahavila bachashai. Therefore, the arrangement was that her servants would bring her this food on the hush. Bachashai. She wouldn't have to ask for it too loudly, and it was a well-kept secret. Now, as we can appreciate, there are a number of basic matters that need to be addressed with regards to this Gemara. Firstly, the very fact that we are, so to speak, in a quandary, we're caught between Moshe, Yaakov's practice, seemingly, and Moshe's text of the Shema. It's very difficult to know why they had different practices themselves. After all, here are the rabbis looking to find the best way to say the mitzvah of Shema. Surely, if the rabbis can work out the best way, then Yaakov and Moshe can work out the best way. But how do they end up with different ways? Which way is the best? If it is correct to say it, then why didn't Moshe say it? If perhaps it's not correct for some reason to say it, then why does Yaakov, yes, say it? As if to say, how does there open up this disparity between Yaakov and Moshe? They are the greatest of the great, but they have different practices in terms of Shema. What is behind that discrepancy? Secondly, if there is indeed a problem, it's very difficult to know how it is solved by saying it quietly. Most things in life, if one is unsure whether or not to say them, the answer is not to say it quietly. It's either to make a decision and to say it or not to say it. You need to have your parameters. But it's hardly as if you just say it quietly, then it's as if you didn't say it. You did. And if you're talking to someone and they can hear you, it doesn't matter that you said it quietly. Most times that we're not sure whether to say something, if a person is not sure whether something is Lashon Hara, maybe yes, maybe no. So what's the way forward? To say it quietly? If he's not sure whether it's possible for him to speak at this point during davening. So what should he do? What's the recommendation? Say it quietly. It will be okay. Generally, parenthetically, if a person is not sure whether something is Lashon Hara, it is. If it wasn't, you'd know. But at any rate, it seems to be such an ineffectual solution. If you say it quietly, so then it's like you didn't say it, but you did. Finally, and perhaps most perplexingly, this mashal at the end, where we either understood the matter at hand or we didn't. If we did, we don't need the mashal. If we didn't understand, I'm not sure how the mashal helps. It just seems to be so extraneous. And there's a princess, and there's the food, and she has cravings, but it's degrading, and that's meant to make things easier to understand. But it actually gives us something else that needs to be understood now. A mashal is from the word moshel. Moshel is control. A mashal is there to give you control of an idea that otherwise might elude you, not something else that you need to grapple with. And therefore, these are some of the basic questions that we need to ask about this Gemara. Interestingly, and I think a more well-known version of the origins of the idea of saying Baruch Hashem Kavod Malchuso is mentioned in the Medrash Rabbah, in the Devarim Rabbah. And let us reference that as well, so that we will have the what are basically the two main mesoras that we have as to where Baruch Hashem Kavod Malchuso comes from. As far as the Gemara is concerned, Moshe's never heard of it, he doesn't say it, he doesn't talk about it, but actually according to the Medrash Devarim Rabbah, it's Moshe that accessed Baruch Hashem Kavod Malchuso for us. How so? Says the Medrash, Kisha Ola Moshe Lamorim. When Moshe ascends on high, and he's there, and he's observing, and he's listening, and he's looking, and he hears that the Malachim are saying, Baruch Hashem Kavod Malchuso. And he took such a liking to it, that he took it. And he brought it back down with him, as he came back to give the Torah. And he, moreover, he presented it to Bnei Yisrael. But he told them, listen, this is a wonderful praise. However, it's stolen. I took it from the Malachim, which means you should say it, and it's good to say it, but don't say it too loudly, because there's Malachim there, and it's an issue. That's a rather unusual statement of the Medrash. And moreover, just to make things more helpful, the Medrash provides us with a mashal. And the mashal is of a person who stole jewelry from the royal palace. Because it was, I guess, his wife's anniversary, and desperate times called for desperate measures. And so he steals these jewels from the palace, and he gives them to his wife, and he says to her, the good news is, these are yours. The bad news is, they're stolen. So do not ever wear them outside the house. Because if you do, then there will not be many happy returns. And that's the mashal. And once again, we're confronted with one of these situations where the mashal is more mystifying even than the idea itself. But some basic questions with regards to the Medrash, and I believe it's a well-known Medrash. Firstly, of course, in practicalities, it's quite different than the Gemara in terms of the. So we need to find some point of synthesis between the two. But once again, this idea, it's stolen, and we don't want the Malachim to hear about it, so you have to say it quietly. So, a couple of things. Firstly, we're assuming that if you say something quietly, a Malach can't hear you. It's not entirely clear what is the basis of that presumption. There is a well-known medrash that a Malach doesn't know what you're thinking, but he knows what you're saying, even if you say it quietly, and even though he's far away, conversationally and quietly, it doesn't make a difference. So it sounds like we are assuming that a Malach does not hear something that's said in an undertone. Well, we also need to assume that Malachim can't read. Because if they do, and they're curious, and nothing makes someone more curious than when something is said in an undertone, there is a good chance that they'll look in the Siddur. And if they do, they will find written in an undertone, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso La'olam Void. That is accessible information to everyone. Additionally, as we know, once a year, we say Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso as loud as we can. At that point, the game is up. Because in case they were wondering what it is that the Jewish people are saying under their breath throughout the year, well, now they know. And we assume that they'll remember. And we will assume that it's the same thing every day. And if that isn't enough, then surely the one who expounded this in the Medrash has given the whole thing away anyway, because he's literally gone through the history of where Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso comes from. And therefore, Ein HaMedrash Hazeh Omer Ela Darsheni. The Medrash itself needs to be understood, and it is of a special value because this is something that we say every day, and this is the background, and we need to appreciate the significance and the meaning here. And a very important approach to this entire episode and this entire matter is to be found in the writings of the Maharal. The Maharal, in one of his Sfarim, Nesivos Olam, where he discusses many different topics in Torah, it's divided into Nesivim. And in Nesiv HaAvodah, in Perek Zayin, Maharal explains as follows. We first need to understand what is the significance of Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso. And Maharal explains it in a way perhaps that we would not have. As if to say, we perhaps more relate to Baruch Shem as a response on the part of Yaakov. As if to say, he was worried about his sons, but then they came through and they said Shema Yisrael, and Yaakov is so delighted that his response to his son saying Shema Yisrael is to say Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso. He's responding to that. It's almost like an expanded version of Baruch Hashem, all my sons are saying Shema. Which makes it all the more difficult to understand how we would say that every day after we say the Shema. But Maharal says that Baruch Shem is not a response to Shema Yisrael. It is a progression from Shema Yisrael. As if to say, Shema Yisrael, what we call Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim, accepting the yoke of heaven, Shema Yisrael is accepting and identifying with that concept to a certain level, and Baruch Shem is accepting and identifying with that concept on a higher level. Baruch Shem is a higher level of Kabbalas Ol Malchus Shemayim than Shema Yisrael. Now that is quite a statement. And the Maharal himself does not explicate as to how exactly it is. Perhaps Shema Yisrael is more receiving. Baruch Shem perhaps is more expressing one's involvement with the honor of the Malchus. That's a higher level. And because it's a higher level, says Maharal, it's not for everyone. Not everyone can just turn up and say, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso La'olam Void. There is a certain level that is demanded of the person, a certain level of Kedusha, as is personified, for example, says Maharal, by Yaakov Avin. That means if you're Yaakov, and Yaakov is Kadosh, right, Kadosh Yisrael, And his sons say Shema Yisrael. So the most natural thing and the most appropriate thing for him to respond with is Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso Le'olam Void. And that is why Yaakov responded in that way. So on the one hand, Yaakov says it, and we appreciate what that means. On the other hand, Moshe didn't say it. That was our quandary. Moshe didn't say it. Except the question is, why does Moshe not say it? Is Moshe less holy than Yaakov? If it's appropriate for Yaakov, it's not appropriate for Moshe. It is appropriate for Moshe. But the difference between the two is that when Yaakov said it, he was responding personally. Yaakov can say it. When Moshe transmits Shema Yisrael, that's not Moshe saying the Shema. That's Moshe transmitting Shema to the Jewish people at large, as a nation. The Jewish people as a nation are not Yaakov Avinu. They're his descendants, and they're good people, but they're not Yaakov. They don't have that level of Kedusha. And therefore, the appropriate form, if you wish to transmit Shema Yisrael to the cross-spectrum of the Jewish people, it needs to land at the lowest common denominator, which is lower than the threshold of what's required to say Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso Le'olam Void. And once we appreciate the background to why Yaakov said it, representing himself, and why Moshe didn't say it, representing the Jewish people, we can then begin to get a sense of the dilemma that Chazal had. It's very interesting. Generally speaking, when it comes to keeping mitzvahs, we Torah Tzivalanu Moshe. We take our cue regarding mitzvahs from Moshe. Not from anyone before. Everything's cancelled from before. The parameters of a mitzvah come from Sinai. So it's interesting that we're moved by the disparity between Yaakov and Moshe here. If for some reason Yaakov said it and Moshe didn't, follow Moshe. I mean, that's what we do when it comes to mitzvahs. Here, it's more nuanced. Because we do not fully wish to abdicate on what Yaakov had and what Yaakov was expressing when he said Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso. We don't wish to completely cut ties with that. Even though it's true that the difference between us and Yaakov is such that what's appropriate for him to say is not appropriate for us to say, but if we leave it at that, then perhaps there is a counter danger. What is the danger if we say it out loud like Yaakov? The danger is that we are misrepresenting ourselves. One needs to be at a certain level, and as a nation, on a daily basis, we are on that level. That's not true. You can't say it. There's a reason why Moshe didn't say it. That's the reason. On the other hand, Yaakov said it. And if we don't say it at all, then we have, in a sense, cut ties with everything that Yaakov represents. And from a certain point of view, that's also not correct. Because as true as it is that we are not on the level that Yaakov is, but on the other hand, we have a great deal in common with him, we are descended from him, we have the same, in principle, capacities that he had. What brought Yaakov to his unique level? His neshama, which then dictated his life. We also have a neshama. It doesn't always dictate everything that we do, but we have it. And that's something that we have in common with Yaakov. That's the risk of not saying Baruch Shem at all. As if to say, that's Yaakov, he's there, we're here, never the twain shall meet, and therefore we can never aspire to move even closer to Yaakov because there's a fundamental gulf between us. And that's why the rabbis were reluctant to just leave it out, and that's that. But you've got to find the way forward. And what is the way forward? Here, amazingly, the way forward is to say it quietly. And what do we achieve when we say it quietly? So the Maharal explains that when you say it quietly, which is in a sense an inner way of speaking. Of course, the louder you speak, and when you speak audibly, you speak to those outside of you. But if you say something that is inaudible, then you are expressing something that is inside of you. It's like an inner way of talking. Or in Maharal's terms, it's like a neshamadika way of talking. and that is appropriate for every person. That is correct. That is, he may not have more than that, but he needs to know that that's what he has, because with that he can build. And thus, we don't say it out loud because it hasn't taken over our being, the way that it should, in the way that it did with Yaakov. But we can't afford to neglect it, because then you'll never hear from your neshama. And then you'll never get any closer to the way that Yaakov is. And that is what's behind this harmony of saying it quietly. You are being honest. You are being dishonest if you say it out loud, but you are being critically honest if you say it quietly. And that brings us to the mashal, Rabbi Yitzchak's mashal of the princess. Because in the mashal, although there's many aspects to the mashal, and some of them yet need to be worked out. But of course, Bas Melachim has a dilemma. And says Maharal, every person has a Bas Melachim inside of them that has this dilemma. Bas Melachim means descended from royalty. Every person has an element of them that is descended from royalty. And in this mashal, so then she catches the aroma of this food and she's caught. Should she say something? Should she not say something? And what are the sides? What's at stake? On the one hand, if she says something, genai hula, it's degrading for her. Should she say nothing, tsar hula, it's distress for her, because she needs to say something. Says Maharal, that is a depiction of a person's neshama. It's bas melachim, and there's something that it wants to say. But if it says it out loud, as if to say, as if the neshama is speaking on behalf of the entire person, what's the problem? Genai hula. That's degrading. It's degrading. The person degrades themselves because they are portraying themselves and presenting themselves as being on a level much higher than they are. That is a degrading thing to do. What then shall we recommend in the interest of honesty? Say nothing. Tsar hula. That will be the cause of distress for the neshama. The neshama, for the sake of honesty, now will never be heard from. And that's tsar, because the neshama needs to be heard from. And that's why the mashal is b'chashai. To say it quietly, it's realistic on the one hand, but it's optimistic on the other hand. And that is a daily reminder, twice a day, as a person receives Ol Malchus Shamayim with Shema. On the basic level, they hear from a part of them that's capable of receiving Ol Malchus Shamayim on a much higher level. It's good to hear from that part of ourselves. And of course, this will explain to us, says Maharal, why it is that on one day a year, on Yom Kippur, everyone says Baruch Shem out loud. What changed on Yom Kippur? What changed is, it's the one day a year where it is truthful to say that the soul does indeed represent the entire person. We are like Yaakov on that day. We're not like Yaakov in the sense that it took a lot to get us there. It takes a day of not eating and drinking, and we can't really sustain that. But for that day, we've managed to close the gap critically between us and Yaakov, and are able to say that out. The difference is Yaakov can say that on the day that he eats. We can only say it on a day like Yom Kippur. But that's what's behind it. And with this in mind, as we turn now towards the Medrash that we mentioned, Dvarim Rabbah, where Moshe steals it from the Malachim. And as we know, whenever we talk about the accusations of Malachim, we need to be very careful, in the sense that Malachim are angels. We assume everything they do is angelic, and accusing people is not very angelic, and being jealous is not very angelic. But somehow we're always concerned that the Malachim, they'll criticize us. But where does that come from? It's part of them being Malachim. A Malach is dedicated to praising Hashem, and is therefore jealous on behalf of praises of Hashem if they are uttered by people who are not on that level. In a sense, therefore, this is why the Medrash says that the jewels are stolen and it's not appropriate for a commoner to wear them. And what that means is, if we say Bar Shem, so the kitruk of the malach and the accusations is, are you on a level where you can say that? That's the idea of a kitruk of malachim. And by the way, parenthetically, but very interestingly, this episode, just to come back to Yaakov just for a moment, but we'll see how things begin to unify. This is really support for an idea which is mentioned by Tosfos in Maseches Brachos on Daf Gimel. Tosfos there are talking about Kaddish and the fact that Kaddish is in Aramaic. And as we know, the epicenter of Kaddish is Yehi Shmei Rabba Mevarach. And Tosfos quotes something in the name of the Olam, which I was not aware that that was a phrase that's used already in the time of the Rishonim. The Olam or the Olam is what people generally say, what everyone says, but it's often meant in a good way. And here, Tosfos quote the Perush of the Olam. And what did the Olam say with regards to why Kaddish is in Aramaic? The Olam says, Kaddish is in Aramaic because it is such a powerful praise of Hashem. We need to say it in Aramaic in order to circumvent Malachim. As we know, Malachim, they do not relate to Aramaic. I have a lot of Talmidim who are very angelic in that in that respect. But whether it's a question of principle, they only relate to Lashon HaKodesh and not to Aramaic. And therefore, we're looking to bypass Malachim. Why? Because, say the Olam, because if you say it in Hebrew, you open yourself up to kitruk from the Malachim, because they'll say, what a powerful praise of Hashem. Are you on a level that you can utter that praise? And therefore, we avoid the situation, we avoid the confrontation by shifting languages into Aramaic, which just goes under the radar. That, says the Olam, is why Kaddish is in Aramaic. Very interesting. But Tosfos do not accept it. And Tosfos say, but I don't agree. And the reason is very simple, because as true as it is that it is a very wonderful praise of Hashem, but there's many other wonderful praises that we don't flip everything into Aramaic. And really what Tosfos are saying is, can you establish the credentials of this, of the Kaddish as being on a level beyond all other praises that it requires such a measure, and none of the others do? And Tosfos do not feel that that's the case, and therefore they give a much more, shall we say, practical reason why Kaddish is in Aramaic. In the times of the Gemara, many people, surprising as it sounds, many people understood Aramaic much better than they understood Hebrew. If you would say something in Hebrew, they would not understand. If you would translate it into Aramaic, their face would light up. And that is the origins of the minhag of reading the Targum. They used to read the Targum at Kriyas HaTorah. People would sit through the pasuk and nod politely. They had no idea what's going on, and then someone mentioned Unculus, and then everything became understood. Very different than nowadays. And therefore, says Tosfos, because it's so important that everyone understand the Kaddish, that's why it's in Aramaic. Quite different than the first parish that they brought from the Olam. However, it is possible to adduce support for the Peirush that Tosfos rejected, that it's because of the elevated nature of Kaddish that it's in Aramaic, because of the Malachim. Tosfos asked, well, how is this different than any other praise? There's many good praises. Where does the answer come from? Rabbi Chiel Heller, in his introduction to his Peirush on Haggadah Shel Pesach, or Yesharim, he refers our attention to one of the Targumim on this week's Parsha. When we think of Targum, we think generally of Targum Unculus, but as we know, there's more than one Targum. Unculus is the most literal, shall we say. But there's also Targum Yonas and Ben Uziel, and there's also Targum Yerushalmi. If you have Mikoros Gadolos, there's the whole section, and there's even more Targumim, but those are the three that made it into Mikoros Gadolos. And they're all from Chazal. And if you look in the Targum Yerushalmi, it's very interesting because it actually brings the entire story at the beginning of Bereishis Memtes, the entire story of Yaakov and his sons. And interestingly, it brings it more in Aramaic than the Gemara does. Reish Lakish, it's half Aramaic. It's mostly Aramaic. It's mostly Hebrew, Reish Lakish, the quotation that we had from the Gemara in Pesachim. But the Targum Yerushalmi is pure Aramaic, which is very interesting. because that means when it gets to the point where the brothers have said or the sons have said Shema Yisrael, and Yaakov responds Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso, you finally get a chance to find out what Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso sounds like in Aramaic. And Targum Yerushalmi says, free translation till we get to that point, when Yaakov heard his son say Shema Yisrael, Ani va'omar Yehei Shemei Rabba Mevarach Olam Olmei Olmei. In other words, the Targum Yerushalmi is telling us that Yehei Shemei Rabba Mevarach is the Aramaic rendition of Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso. Well, says Rabbi Chiel Heller, if that's the case, then we understand that indeed there is basis to say that this Shevach is different. We know it from the Medrash. It's for that reason we need to say it quietly. So one approach is to say it quietly, but the other approach is to turn it into Aramaic. But that's the background to that understanding of Kaddish. Once again, this will explain to us how saying it quietly is considered to mitigate against the accusation of Malachim. For we ask basic questions, too basic in fact. If you say it quietly, you're okay. Why are you okay? The Malachim can't hear, they don't hear so well, they don't read so well, they don't remember so well. They know everything. There's nothing that once there's an art scroll sitter now. I mean, it's readily available. And there's no excuses anymore. So why is it acceptable to say it quietly? What have you addressed? What you've addressed is you're no longer susceptible to the accusation of a malach. Because if a malach should now say to you, are you on a level that you can say Baruch Shem? That's for malachim. How are you saying it? Is it appropriate? The answer is, I'm not on that level, but I have something within me that is. And that's what I'm expressing by saying Baruch Shem. That's why when you say it quietly, Malachim can't say that's not appropriate for you, because the element of your of within ourselves that is expressing it, the neshama, it is appropriate. And once again, we understand how once a year, when we say Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso out loud, it's the one day where, but it's only for a day, but what a day, where we can say Baruch Shem out loud, and the Malach can't say anything, because what's he going to say? Are you like a Malach? Yes. Today I'm like a malach. Tomorrow I'll be back to saying it quietly. You know I'm going to say it, and you know it's going to be quiet, but today I can say it out loud. And in fact, this brings us back to the mashal of the person. He took the jewels, he gave them to his wife. He says, you can wear them, but you can only wear them inside. What is the nimshal? Where is inside? Where is outside? Rabbi Yosef Chaim mi Baghdad, the Ben Ish Chai, in his Chidush Yagodas, Ben Yehoyada, in the Maseches Psochim, he explains that there is a day when everyone can say Baruch Shem out loud, and there is a place where everyone can say Baruch Shem out loud. And that place is the Beis HaMikdash. Because the Beis HaMikdash, the environs of the Beis HaMikdash are such that they elevate the person, whoever enters there becomes like a malach. And that's why he becomes able, as long as he's there, to say Baruch Shem out loud. That's the inside. In the Moshul, he said, you can wear them inside, not outside. Baruch Shem is jewelry that we wear inside the Beis HaMikdash, not outside. And that, says Rabbi Chiel Heller, is why the Gemara says, and in fact it says that there in Brachos and Daf Gimel, that when Hashem hears us say, Baruch Shem, Yehi Shmei Rabba Mevorach, he remembers the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. That's the whole story there with Rabbi Yossi and Eliyahu HaNavi. He remembers the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Why? Why does Saint Baruch Shem call him to recall the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash? Because, as Rabbi Chiel Heller, he's hearing in Aramaic what we used to be able to say in Hebrew on location in the Beis HaMikdash. And now we're forced, so to speak, to say in Aramaic, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Chaval. And looking forward to that time where things will get back to be able to say, to have that location where we can say, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso. So these are some of the ideas and themes that accompany the concept of Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso. And from there, perhaps, if we close the circle, because as we mentioned, all of this came about as a result of Yaakov's desire. Legalo says Ketz Hayomin. He wants to reveal the end of days, and he can't. And he thinks that's because there's something wrong with one of his children, but that's not so. They're all on level. So the question is, Well then, why can't he? If it's not because one of his sons is disqualified or substandard, then why can't he? The answer is because it's just incongruous with life in exile. It's not yet appropriate to know that much about the Gula. And therefore, Yaakov shifts to other topics. But I think it's important to point out that it is not a total shift. As if to say, his topic of choice was Geula. But that was withheld from him, and therefore he defaulted to some other topic called giving brachos to his sons. It's not a complete shift in topic. And the reason why is because in the absence of being able to formally and explicitly talk about when the Geula will be and how it will be, what's the next best thing? Bringing it about. That's not a shift in topic. As if to say, Yaakov says, I'd love to talk to you about more explicitly about the Geula. That's not for now. So what is for now? Getting there. And that happens through giving the brachas to the sons, because each of the brachas reveals to that tribe, to that son, a certain quality that he has, a certain specialty that he has, a certain talent that he has, that needs to develop and needs to make his contribution to the Jewish people. And in so doing, we'll bring them closer to Geula. The next best thing to knowing when Mashiach will come is bringing him. And that's what Yaakov shifted into. Therefore, ultimately, it's still about the Ketz Hayomim, not about the date, but about closing the gap between the present and the future. So having devoted much of our time to the Perek of the Brachas, let's conclude by referring to a very interesting episode which happens at the end of the Parsha. After Yaakov has been buried, the brothers look around, take stock, and make a decision. And that is in Perek Nun, Pasuk Tesvav. Perek Nun Pasuk Tesvav. Vayiru Achei Yosef Kimei Saviyem. Yosef's brother saw that their father had died, which of course is quite obvious, but really what it means is they saw that something had changed now that their father had died. Vayomer, and they said, Lu Yustamenu Yosef. Yosef is gonna get us now. He's harboring ill will towards us. Vashev Yashiv Lanu is Kolarar Shegomano. So he's going to do everything that we did him. He's going to do to us. That's what they thought. That was their concern. So much so that they then proceeded to do the following. Pasuk Tetzayim Vayitzavu al Yosef Lemor Avicha Tziva Lefnei Moseh Lemor. They sent a message to Yosef saying that Yaakov commanded you before he died with the following words. Kotomer Yosef. He told us to tell you. Anna, sona pesha checha v'chatosam, ki ra'agam alucha. Bear their sin, don't take revenge against them. That's the message that our father sent for you. Now, that message was never given. The brothers fabricated this. And this actually is the first source of three. In a very interesting sugya in the Gemara, it's actually in Maseches Yevamos and Daf Samach Dalet, which it's difficult to know how to contain it or how to quantify it, but it begins here. The Gemara says, we learn from here, mutter l'shanus b'pnei ha-shalom. It's mutter to change the truth for the sake of peace. And we learn it from the brothers, because the brothers, they fabricated the story for the sake of peace, their own peace, and moreover, there's a presumption in the Gemara, and that is that what they did was endorsed, meaning it was acceptable, because if it wasn't, then it's not mutter, and you can't say it's mutter, which means it's observed, and it was acceptable. B'pnei ha-shalom. That is the first of three sources. The second source, quoted, is from the Navi, where Hashem says to Shmuel, he tells Shmuel to go and anoint David HaMelech. And Shmuel is afraid because Shaul was still king. He says, if Shaul hears that I went to anoint David HaMelech during his reign, he'll kill me. Eich eilech v'shama Shaul v'haragani. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself gave an eitzah to Shmuel. He says, take an animal, Eglas Bokor Tikaf Lecha, take an animal. If Shaul asks where you're going, say, I'm going to Beis Lechem to bring a korban. And bring a korban, but that wasn't the real answer. But it was acceptable because Shmuel was in danger. That's the second source. And the third source actually goes back earlier in Bereishis, the well-known episode where Sarah, upon hearing that her and Avram will have children, but she says, Vaduni Zakein, my husband is old, he's too old to have children. But when Hashem replayed that message to Avram, he said that she said, Va'ani Zakanti, that I'm old. And he changed from Avram being old to Sarah being old. And these now become the three formal sources. There are other instances in the Gemara where you can draw further examples, but these are the formal sources that are mentioned in Yevamos there in Daf Samach Daled. It's very interesting because if we compare these three, I think it's fair to say, if we compare these three sources, that we can probably learn the most if we're looking to define what is Darkei, what is Bipnei HaShalom for the sake of peace. How far does that go? Where is the frontier there? I think we can learn the most from the third case, and perhaps almost nothing from the first two cases. And the reason why I say that, certainly from the second, is because if we go back to the brothers themselves, the brothers are afraid. What are they afraid that Yosef will do? They suspect him of the worst, for including what? They were going to kill him. Maybe he'll kill them. That's pikuach nefesh. It's mutter to change a lot of things in a situation of pikuach nefesh. By change, in other words, it's mutter to, with the exception of three averus, a person can violate Shabbos. So in other words, mipnei ha-shalom, that seems to be something of an understatement. I mean, if their life is in danger, that's not called mipnei ha-shalom. I mean, the Gemara says it is, but... And certainly when it comes to Shmuel and Shaul, if Shmuel thinks that Shaul will kill him, that's pikuach nefesh. If it's mutter to lie, it's because it's mutter to do almost anything in the case of pikuach nefesh. So in other words, the definition of what constitutes mipnei ha-shalom, we learn almost very little from those first two cases because they were such highly charged situations where it was perhaps even danger to life. Seemingly, the most we can learn about what is mipnei ha-shalom is from the third case. Because in the third case, Hashem wanted to avoid Avram hearing that Sarah said that he was old, which is a very mild breach, shall we say, of shalom for many reasons. Firstly, he was. He's 99 years old. That's old. And secondly, it was said within a very practical context. If he's too old to have children, he is. And from a certain point of view, that's not an insult. It's a fact of life. And it's not something that Sarah said to anyone. It's something that she thought. And she thought it because it was relevant and it's true. To change that, I think it gives us a completely different understanding of what is Mipnei HaShalom. And it's interesting to mention, again, it would take much work in order to fully quantify and crystallize it. But the Rambam, when he talks about changing things for the sake of Shalom, he expresses it not only in terms of avoiding bad feeling, but even promoting good feeling. Kedei lachavvan ze es ze, in order to endear people to each other. That's actively pursuing shalom. It's not in any way avoiding some bad feeling, but it's promoting good feeling is also mutter. That certainly would then need to be tracked in terms of what are the parameters of darkei shalom. But in any case, just to return for a final few moments to the source of the brothers' concern. The brothers, they see that Yaakov has died. Things are different now. And they have, as far as they're concerned, credible grounds for concern that Yosef will be... He is plotting revenge against him. And the question is, what did they see? I think Rashi says famously that he wasn't as cordial with them as he was originally. There is a fascinating Medrash. Medrash Rabbi Eliezer. And the Medrash Rabbi Eliezer says that... Medrash Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, that actually, you know, something happened. They saw something, and that's what made them so concerned. The Medrash says there is a concept that Chayev Adam Lotzeis Lidei HaBrios. and also latzos lidei hamakom. That means a person needs to do the right thing, not only by Hashem, but also by people. And what that means is, it's part of the concept of v'yisem nikiyim, me Hashem and me Yisrael. A person should not portray themselves in a negative light or bring suspicion upon themselves. That's the concept of maras ayin. And we learn it from Bereishis, says the Medrash. How do we learn it from Bereishis? In the following way. The Medrash relates that when they went up to bury Yaakov, this was the first time that Yosef had been back in Eretz Canaan since he'd been sold. The last time he was in Eretz Canaan was the day he was sold, when he was 17 years old. And now he's back. And not only is he back, says the Medrash, but when they were on their way back from the Leviah of Yaakov, Hebron, they passed by the pit that the brothers threw Yosef into. That's a moment. And Yosef, he took a moment and he went over to the pit and made a bracha. He looked inside, made a bracha. Baruch she'asali neis b'makom hazeh. The last time he was in this pit, it was with snakes and scorpions. And now he's on top of the world. Baruch she'asali neis b'makom hazeh. So the Medrash says, that's what he said, but he didn't say it loudly. And no one heard him. No one heard what he said. But they know what they saw. They saw Yosef. Everyone knows what that pit is. There's Yosef goes into the pit, look intently inside the pit, say something, and then come back to rejoin them. From that point on, the brothers were scared for their lives. One said to the other, did you see it? Did you see that look on his face? Did you hear what he said? I didn't hear what he said. I don't want to hear what he said, because I'm pretty sure it's not good for us. And they didn't know that he was saying a bracha. And that was an event that triggered their fear. So says the Medrash. So that in itself is an amazing thing. But not to forget, as Nechama Leibovitz says, who quotes this Medrash, not to forget why the Medrash quotes the Pasuk. The most amazing part of that Medrash is that it is said on a certain level, we need to speak with reservation here, but it is said on a certain level as a criticism of Yosef. Because the Medrash quotes this as the earliest example of Chayav Adam Lotzesli Deha Brios. A person needs to do the right thing by people. A person shouldn't bring suspicion upon themselves. In other words, the moral of the story is that Yosef should not have said the bracha quietly. Because then who knows what the brothers are thinking? And he put them into that state of trauma, and that was incorrect. He shouldn't have allowed them to suspect him of plotting his revenge. That's the point of the Medrash. But what a thing to say. As if to say, I think, and this is now the Madrega of Yosef, I think it would be fair if we would say that when Yosef sees that pit again, and it's such an emotion-laden moment, and he just wants to make a bracha, you'd think that he doesn't really need to have anything else on his mind at that time. It is an absolutely intense Ben Adam Lamakom moment. And that's all he needs to have on his mind. And along comes the Medrash and says, no, even at such a time, even at such a moment, there should have been room in his consciousness. There should have been presence of mind with all the intensity of the bracha he's about to make to leave room for, is anyone else going to misunderstand this? Will anyone else perhaps become afraid based on this? That should also have been part of his mindset moving forward. And that is a very high demand indeed. And that really is the lesson. Again, we're not on the level of Yosef, but on our level, to learn from that as we pursue what we hope are meaningful Bin Adam Lamakom moments, they shouldn't be at the expense of Bin Adam Lachaveru. Ultimately, an understanding of the synergy and where the two are heading in the same place should mean that one shouldn't be at the expense of the other. That's the golden formula, as expressed by no less a personality than Yosef HaTzadik in the end of Vayechi, and as an appropriate place for us to take leave for the time being of Chumash Bereishis. Chazak, chazak, v'nischazek, mitzvah Hashem, we'll meet again next week for Chumash Shemos.